Dave Fanning on 2FM.
Okay, what'll I do? Will I go to the phone call or will I play a piece of music? I'll go to the phone call. Okay, I will, yes. Just let's see if Aileen is there. Aileen, are you there?
Hey Dave, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well indeed. First of all, where are we now? 23 minutes to the hour of 11 o'clock, and thanks to Alan Rickman. That movie's out now, by the way, which is called A Little Chaos. But Aileen is here because it's Aileen Dillan, and she's talking songs of social protest. It's a three-day conference being held at the University of Limerick. By the way, just I've forgotten something here. We're doing a lot of guitar solo stuff with Koch later on after 11. So your favourite guitar solos or guitar fills or guitar bits, get them into 51551. Sorry, Aileen. Songs of Social Protest, three-day conference being held at the University of Limerick from April 29 to May the 1st, in other words this week, so that's next Wednesday, Thursday and Friday. It's basically a 3-day event on the subject of what makes a protest song. So Aileen, I'm going to have to ask you, because you're one of the organisers, what makes a protest song?
Well, we're hoping that the people who are coming from all over the world, Dave, will help us talk about that. But most people would say what makes a protest song is, I guess, something that looks for broader social change.
Looks for broader social change. Okay, yeah. Are we talking about musicians that you're looking at here, or academics, or what?
Oh, well, I mean, the people who are coming to this, obviously lots of them are academics, but all academics also happen to be musicians and friends and people kind of really engaged in politics. So there are all sorts that are coming, and they're coming from a variety of backgrounds, variety of places where social protest means different things, and they're just playing lots of different music, and we're going to talk about that and try and maybe come up with some ideas about what makes a protest song.
Okay, so if you're talking A to Z, we're not just talking Bob Dylan or anything like that, are we?
Well, it's interesting. When there's four of us involved in organising the conference. So when Amanda, Owen, Martin and I put the call out, we actually thought we'd get loads of Anglo-American papers, you know, on Woody Guthrie, Pete Seeger, maybe Billy Bragg from the UK. Yeah. And we did get a few of those, but we ended up getting people wanting to talk about Algerian Rye, wanting to talk about post-Yugoslav punk, wanting to talk about Aboriginal country music in Australia. So it ran the whole gamut. And we also got historical papers on African-American spirituals. And that's what's so interesting. We're going to be learning about lots of music from other parts of the world, including India, China, you name it.
All right, so we'll get the songs, I don't know, the Occupy Getsy movement, hip-hop in Uganda, Pussy Riot songs during dictatorships, etc., etc.
You've got it, all of those kinds of things, absolutely,
okay.
Yeah.
Is there such a thing as, like, a variety of perspectives? Are there any headlines that you're going with? For instance, like, you know, would anti-austerity be there? Or?
Anti-austerity is definitely there. Actually, the crew that's organising the conference, we're doing a paper on Damien Dempsey. We're looking at these songs like Celtic Tiger and Money Man for that very particular reason. But it's not as prevalent a trope as we would have thought, actually. But it is there. Yeah. It certainly is there, yeah.
So ethnic and racial identity would have to be there. War, revolution, LGBT issues, all that stuff.
Massively so. Absolutely. Everything, yeah, literally from kind of Lady Gaga to you name it.
Okay, well, if that's the case, then what exactly do you hope to get out of this conference? Is it just a good old natter, is it?
Well, a good old natter is the basis for great exchange, Dave.
Indeed. I was not throwing away a good old natter as a bad phrase. I meant it as a good thing.
And I'm right there with you. It absolutely is, because what happens is you meet people, you network, you start to get a sense of what's out there. And hopefully, as academics, of course, we want to produce a couple of books. There's no doubt about that. But we're really interested in learning about the other music forms and kind of coming up with some ideas around this that hopefully have significance for people, you know?
And like other ancillary stuff, is there byproduct stuff? Is there other stuff happening around it? Is there face painting, DJ sets?
we might do a little face painting for sure, but there are absolutely DJ sets. We have DJ Owen Devereaux, who's one of the organisers, doing a set. We have Joe O'Connor, who's actually the chair of creative writing in UL. He's doing a reading from Star.
Oh, very good. Yeah.
We have, of course, Damien Dempsey on Thursday night. We have a gig in Dolan's, which always supports these kinds of things. And we have on Friday morning, we actually have a chap giving us a workshop on how to write a protest song in the style of Bertolt Brecht.
How to write a protest song in the style of Bertolt Brecht.
Of course, he was a very early 20th century.
Indeed, really, absolutely. Like, indeed, he was. Yeah, take a look at everybody from Gavin Friday to David Bowie doing all that stuff. Anyway,
absolutely.
Okay, now, what's your own view on protest songs? Do you think that they actually do anything to make change happen? Like, are they meant to make change happen, or are they just meant to, that great phrase that we use all days these days, raise awareness?
Well, you see, it's a great question. I mean, there's two camps, I think, on this. Well, on one hand, people will say, well, a song can't change people. People change people. People change things. But you see, a song is really interesting. It can become a sort of a technology or tool. People can listen to it, and if it's a good song, it can affect them and change them, and then that makes them change their situation. I think that's the way to look at it. And more importantly, though, sometimes maybe change doesn't come immediately, but singers and songwriters, they always bear witness to something really important. And even if that only kind of comes to light down the track, those sort of meanings accrue and people will hear those things and it makes them change. I mean, this happens all the time. There's a very famous French sociologist called Jacques Attali, and he says music doesn't just reflect what's going on in the world, it can actually predict it. And I think with social protest, it can often do that. A song can be written and it can predict actually what's to come and it can raise awareness.
Okay, just leaving out what I mentioned about Uganda and what I mentioned about Russia, whatever, just in the West, with the kind of music that we've all had, like, and you mentioned Woody Guthrie right through to Bob Dylan, in the 60s, etc., and the fact that there would be many people who would say that while the music of sort of pampered people in Laurel Canyon in California mightn't have done much to do anything other than make money, there are those who would say that a lot of that music helped with the Vietnam War ending it, and people would say that maybe the glue that put it all together was the music that was being sung and that got people together, that happened to make the movements move and all the rest of it. That if that's the case, and if even possibly stuff like Crosby, Stills and Blink and Nash might have done something along those lines, is it possible to say that the music of the West and that rock music stuff, that even if they are singing protest over the last 10 or 15 or 20 years, the effect has been minimized to the point where it doesn't exist anymore?
Oh, I don't know if I'd agree with that. I mean, I think if you think about presidential races, if you think about the critique of the kind of ecology, the way the world is going, you know, songs that are associated with anti-austerity, I think, and even let's talk about it, you know, the water protesters, there's a lot of singing around that too. I think these things galvanize people. I think it kind of motivates them, and there's nothing quite like the human voice for solidarity. You know, human voices.
Okay, so basically, even if you say the songs themselves don't change things, people change things, but songs can actually get you thinking and empower you to make the changes.
Exactly, and I mean, that's what makes the great poets, the great lyricists. But of course, also conversely, there are some songs that maybe don't start out as protest, but somehow get kind of hitched onto a particular movement and take that meaning. And so, you know, there's so many types, and that's kind of what's so exciting for us, to be in a space with 90 other people to talk about these things.
Okay, old political ballads and stuff like that, you know, with 45,000 verses and all those things, would they be kind of the first form of protest song, and then it's evolved into all sorts of different directions?
I think so. I mean, a lot of those older songs, if you go way back to the Ashlings in Irish history,
right,
and you move right up through the 19th century and into the 20th century, and the same in the States, a lot of those songs are what are called narrative songs. They tell a story, or as the great Australian singer-songwriter Paul Kelly calls them, message songs. And in telling simple stories, they absolutely mark, you know, very important moments, whether it's to do with war or colonization or anti-apartheid or civil rights. So yeah, they go right back. But they change too, because if you think about it, once kind of rock came and punk came, genres started to shift as well. And suddenly it was more about noise and energy and sometimes nihilism maybe.
Yeah, but sometimes something in a 2-minute punk song could have been just as good as 45,000 verses from a Shannon singer, you know?
Absolutely. Look, I teach a class to first years in UL, and one of the first songs I play them is God Save the Queen, you know, by the Sex Pistols.
I was just going to say, it's not the other one, it's not the real one, no.
The first year's date.
Right,
the first
okay, by the Sex Pistols,
you know, it's a great one to play them, because if you're talking about, you know, what does it mean to be young, and how do you find your place in the world, and what are the things that, you know, are aggravating you at a particular time, and it's a way to teach them about Thatcherism, and, you know, it's a great way
and
to...
And Damien Dempsey, of course, would be perfect from our point of view, using rap and Irish balladry and fantastic songs like Celtic Tiger, all that stuff.
Absolutely. He's really, really clever, because he leans back into his urban folk of Dublin totally, and into the older style traditional stuff. But yeah, his music is so contemporary. It's hybrid music. He's using rap. He uses reggae as well, of course, which is associated with Jamaica and with more kinds of politics of race and freedom. So he's really good. And he's still, in his singing, if you listen to him carefully, he's got beautiful ornamentation and vocal productions that are so traditional.
So therefore, I suppose what we're trying to say is here that it can go in all different directions, can come in all different shapes and sizes, so it might be a bit unfair for me to say, can you bottle it for a second in an answer here, or sort of encapsulate it? Can you say that there are any kind of similarities between all the protest songs and all the movements and all the ideas that you've just mentioned, and if so, are there key ingredients, and what are they?
I would think that the voice has to be central. I think it has to be a voice that, putting aside the punk stuff, I think the voice telling a story, and I think it's got to be believable. I think the person singing it has to have some perceived, at least, integrity on behalf of the audience and a sense of coming from the place where they're singing. I think those kinds of things are really important. So you'll find a lot of process singers will come from the subaltern, will come from the left, will come from... They're outliers, oftentimes.
Right. Do you know, funny thing is, there's been a lot of movies over the last 15 or 20 years, and particularly over the last 10 years, and they all come from the same kind of thing of basically being kind of looking back at the 80s and being slightly kind of, what am I talking about, slightly, definitely anti-Margaret Thatcher, but very much kind of the mining community here or Made in Dagenham there and all those kind of things. And they're all the same kind of movie in some ways. One of the most recent ones that I know that people didn't like much, I thought it was fantastic, I loved it, was called Pride, which was the movie which was the one about the mining community and the gay pride people in London who came to help the mining community to make money during the mid-80s, during the Arthur Scargill, Margaret Thatcher, etc. and blah, blah. And one of the things is, was a powerful piece in the movie. I mean, absolutely powerful, where they're all just sitting in the local community centre and suddenly somebody starts to sing Bread and Roses.
Yeah, it's an amazing moment, and I'd encourage anybody to go on YouTube just to see the clip. Bread and Roses actually is from a speech, a poem really, that was written by a chap called James Oppenheim, and it was put to a song. This was like back in 1911. It became a song in 1912, and it was one of those songs that was associated with women and labour struggle, and that's what the whole metaphor is, bread and roses. We want bread, we want to be able to eat, but we also want to have, you know, an aesthetic quality of life as well. So it was a song that gained huge traction throughout the 20th century, and it's reworked now in this movie, which represents the 1980s, but with like a lovely new edge to it, because it's also referencing LGBT kind of rights as well. And it's an incredible song. So what happens is that these songs don't go away, they get reinterpreted over and over again. Yeah. Joan Baez has done a version of it. So many people have done a version of this particular song, actually. I think Billy Bragg has. It's just one of those kind of canon songs that makes people just, you know, associate with the larger workers' movement and workers' rights and mobilisation of rights, basically.
Yeah, and so therefore, like, for a lot of people, a different thing would be a different program. For instance, like, some people might like acoustic music, an unaccompanied voice, Shan knows, I mentioned earlier on, would be the best way. And like, it'll go right up to Rage Against the Machine and Killing in the Name, etc.
Absolutely. I mean, Annie DeFranco is a great person for this, because she kind of rails against people thinking that protest music is only some fellow with a guitar singing, that it's not just folk music. From her perspective, folk is also punk, it's also rap, it's actually about attitude and awareness and heritage and community, all the same things that Damien Dempsey talks about, actually.
Okay, well, the conference itself, it is accessible to people who might not think they're very academic but love music?
It absolutely is. I mean, look, you know, academics, we do like our theory, but we like our theory only in the service of good discussion and dialogue. At the end, this is actually about the songs, this is about the singers, this is about the idea of protest. That's what these things are about.
Okay, and you yourself are going to be talking about Paul Kelly, who you mentioned earlier on, the Aboriginal artist. So let's just take a look once again. We are talking here about Songs of Social Protest. Mm-hmm. It's a 3-day conference being held at the University of Limerick, UL, from next, it's Wednesday, Thursday and Friday, right, of this week, April 29th. 9:30 and then May 1st. That's and May Day, of course, is the third. I've just realised May Day is the third day. That was planned, was it?
That was planned. One of the primary drivers, Martin Power. Absolutely. I mean, that seems really important. And the night before May Day, we have a gig in Dolan's. There's still tickets left.
Damien Dempsey, etc. Yeah. Okay. Now it's ul.ie.
PMPC, Popular Music, Popular Culture, we're the kind of cluster.
UL.ie/PMPC. Yeah. All right, very good. Thanks a million, Aileen, and good luck, Dave, with the week, and have a great time.
Cheers, appreciate it.
Thanks,
thank
good
you.
Luck.
Bye.
All right, take it easy. Bye.